See if we, yeah, that did it.
Great.
Great. Okay. So,
I have to ask you a question. The
group you were with when you were in San Francisco before you went over to Fresno for the strike.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Jesuits were having this symposium on Jesuit spirituality and ministry, and they invited any communities of women religious who had some origins related to the Jesuits or in some way had some connections with them. And our congregation was founded by a Jesuit, and so we were invited, any of us who cared to attend. I really don't recall how the choices were made, but a group of us went, maybe 10 or 15 of us from this province, and some of our sisters of St. Joseph from other of our provinces also, one of whom, and it will, she will be important for this report, was a general counselor who came from our St. Paul province, but he was on our general council, which operates out of St. Louis. So, among the various kinds of input sessions that we had two or three, and I can't even tell you who the speakers were or the topic purported to be to start with, other than the fact maybe one of them was on about poverty, possibly. But whatever, a couple of these speakers talked a great deal about the plight of the farm worker, and first of all about the plight of the poor and the oppressed, and then more specifically the plight of the farm worker. And I had been living with Julie Marciak and Judy Lovchik, both of whom were very actively involved with the farm workers, and we were living out in the parish in Torrance, and the two of them and some of us got a number of the parishioners interested in this, and so we had potluck suppers to support the farm workers, and the people in the parish had become very interested, a whole group of them. We collected food and clothing and things when the farm workers were down in the Coachella, I think it was. And a couple of the men drove a truck down, and we took things down and went to an afternoon liturgy with the farm workers and that season. And so, consequently, because of this involvement, when I heard these lectures, I guess I heard a little more than I might otherwise have listened for. And as the symposium began to draw to a close, one of the lecturers told us about the fact that if we were interested in getting some insights into the situation in Fresno, which was very bad, there would be an opportunity for us to do this at the end of the symposium, and people who were interested could sign up, and they would hire a bus to take people down to the area. Or if we cared to go in private cars, we could do that. So I remember all the details of how this thing was mobilized, but the decision was that a whole group of us were going to go down the evening that the symposium closed. It closed with a big mass of the cathedral. And when that was over with, we were scheduled to drive to Parlier. I went in a car with three or four of our sisters. And we drove most of the night. Well, we drove all night. And we arrived there in Parlier in this little park in the wee hours of the morning. I don't know whether it was 3 o'clock or 3:30, or whatever it was just a good start, and we were all quite tired. Anyway, we were excited about the whole thing. As time went on, people began to gather, farm workers mostly, and Chris Hartmeyer arrived on the scene, and there was some priest there whose name I don't recall. But also, not only had sisters come, but a lot of priests had come to this too. So we had tons of priests and sisters in this little park. And Chris gave us a talk in which he sort of tried to plot out the situation as it stood right then for the benefit of the people who had come from other parts of the country and weren't too in touch with us. And toward the end of his talk, he said, "Now, if you would like to have an opportunity to see what really happens to the farm workers, without any threat to you, there's a place where tomorrow morning we could take you and you could just be on site and look at cedars. There's also another place where it would be just very helpful if religious persons could go. But if you do go, it's quite possible to be arrested. So I wanted to tell you that so that you can make your choices between these two places. A few people got a little irked at this because they felt they'd been co-opted and brought down here, and now they were being, you know, pushed into doing something that they hadn't planned on, and Chris tried to make it quite clear. He had just given them two options. And they didn't have to take either one of them for that matter. Anyway, we were given not very long. I think we had liturgy. And then after liturgy, he said, you know, we have two different sets of instructions, so you really have to make a decision. And those of you who are going to go over, you won't have to worry, go over here. And those of you who are deciding to go to the other place where you risk arrest, you go over there. And so think about what you want to do. And I can remember, I was not anywhere near any of the sisters that I had come with or any of the people that I knew. I was just sort of in the mob. And I thought, I can't think of any good reason for not going to this place, you know. I was scheduled to, I know. Chris had said, you know, it might mean a night in jail. And he said, what we would ask of you is if you in fact decide to do this, that you not accept any kind of privileges because you're priests and nuns, that the farm workers themselves are not given. That you just insist that you be treated like what you don't get out on your own recognizance unless they do, that you just go with the crowd. And so somebody said, well, how long do you think it'll be? And he said, oh, I don't know, a day or two probably. You know, they usually make a big to-do and then they let you go. Well, I was scheduled to be on a retreat team up in Concord in another 10 days from then. I couldn't think of any reason for not doing this, so I went over and met the people who I had decided to come to this one place. And then we got more specific instructions, and eventually we had a lot of cars available that took us there. And I'm not too sure where we ended up going geographically. It seemed like a long ways away from Parlier, but maybe that's because it was early in the morning and I didn't know what I was doing. But we ended up in an apricot, I think it was an apricot or peach grove, and it was on a little dirt road in between orchards. So it wasn't on a regular highway, but it was a dirt road. And we were a mixture of priests and sisters, and they were obviously the farm workers there too. So we stood around there and we prayed. And some of the farm workers called in to the ones that were in the orchard and tried to get them to realize what was happening to them. They would be exploited and to come on out and to join us, and all of us together and solve some of the difficulties. And some of them did, and others chose not to hear. And there were ranch hands, or whatever you want to call them, walking back and forth. And I know we kind of looked at them and thought that we wouldn't want to have to encounter them. You know, they look pretty powerful. So, and eventually they would come out and say things to us, you know, about we ought to go home and do what we were supposed to be doing and not be coming out and doing other people's business. So this went on and on. It was very, very hot. It was terribly hot. And we kept wishing they'd hurry up and come and arrest us because it was so hot. So a rancher's wife came along, and she just, she was just incensed that sisters were doing like this. We should be in the classroom where we belonged, teaching and not out here dabbling in things that we didn't understand. And we attempted to respond to why we were there, but I'm not too sure that anything like this happened. So then the police came, and they told us to leave, to guests to leave, which we didn't do. And they stood around for quite some time, and a police lieutenant came up to two or three of us that were there, and he addressed me for some reason or another, and he said, you know, you do realize, don't you, that if you continue to stay here, you're going to be arrested. And I said, well, that's what we had so had in mind. It probably happened. And so eventually, around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, a bus pulled. Oh, no. They herded us out onto the main road. A large number of police came, and they got us along and took us out on the main road. And eventually, a couple of buses came, and we were put in buses, and we were taken to the Honor Farm. Is it Carruthers? Does it say Carruthers there? Yes. Yes, the industrial farm, which they call the Honor Farm. And we were booked. We used the gym, kind of like that. And they used that to, they had it all set up to take our pictures and our fingerprints and our information. And so we were booked. And eventually, as it came toward evening, they pulled out mattresses, and the same gym that we had all been booked in, all the women, at least, were going to sleep there. And so they gave us all a mattress, and so we only had just what they were wearing, so we were and I don't know whether they supplied a towel for us or not, but at any rate, that's where we slept that night. And the priests were, and the men farm workers were taken downtown to the Fresno County Jail because there really wasn't any room for them. No, in the very beginning they were put in another barracks, that's right. And we were allowed to make a phone call in the evening. And I can just remember, well, you know, we come in with a lot of privacy. And I found all those people all in the same room, and then there was a little tiny lavatory outside, a separate little building with just two compartments and a kind of wash basin that hardly worked at all, and that was the accommodations for all of us, and so that was a little difficult. We were there for possibly 2 nights, I think. Maybe 3, but at least 2. After which time they moved some men out of a kind of a barracks-like building that they had, and they put us, and they put the men, they moved the priest down to the county jail in Fresno. They put the men from this barracks into the priest barracks, and they put the women that they had in this big gym into this other barracks thing. Which was just one long, kind of rounded room with double-deck beds and a table down the middle, which was screwed down with benches on either side of it, and a great big common bathroom off of that. And it had a bit of a yard around it with a high wire fence around the yard, and the door into that was locked, and the gate to the yard was locked, so we were pretty secure. Something that just occurred to me. It must have been in the evening of the first day that a group of officials arrived on the scene and set up tables up in the front of the room. And each one of us was called up to fill out, to answer some questions, which the officer in question filled out. We didn't fill it out. He asked us and we answered him. And they were questions like, do you have full-time employment? And where do you live? And a number of things. And I think those of us who were, as we answered the questions, it seemed to us that our answers were probably in our favor. You know, that we had full-time employment. We have this teacher, full-time employment, and lived in Los Angeles, did live in Fresno, and all this kind of business. Well, the fact of the matter is, this was the application for OR, which we didn't know it was. And we didn't qualify ahead of all the right answers, because if I had full-time employment, I might not hang around Fresno, especially if I didn't live in Fresno, so I might not be available. All the things that appeared to us to be in our favor ended up working against us, and this was scored percentage-wise, and we didn't qualify for OR. So all this big thing about not accepting OR was unnecessary, because they didn't even provide us the opportunity to have it. I think, I'm not sure, but I think I have a copy of that paper upstairs. Look it up. Because I can remember when I got home looking at it and being incensed about the fact that one of the questions was, have you been arrested more than this, less than that, this kind of thing? And there was a place there to put down never, but the man never asked me that one. And consequently, one could look at that and think, I have been arrested before, you know, from the answer that he checked on the paper. So there were a lot of things about that that some of us were, you know, really questioned. Then we were moved to this other barracks, and the same day that we were moved to the other barracks, we were taken downtown for a hearing, or for a, what would you call it? Well, I guess a hearing. At which point we were supposed to plead whether we were guilty or not guilty. And the judge had a few kind of snide remarks to make about sisters, women religious that were involved in this kind of thing. And so, one of the sisters in the group had a friend. She was from Santa Rosa, I believe. And her friend was the lawyer who had been the lawyer for Angela Davis. And he came down to Fresno to defend her. And in the process, of course, of defending her, ended up sort of defending all of us. Yeah. And he had all sorts of questions about the process that was being used. And so, periodically, and she had an opportunity to have an interview with him 2 or 3 times, so we would get a little bit of a sense of maybe what was happening. And then she was the one that was sort of, if you will, kind of on trial, so she went off to court. And the judge was very negative about her and about us and the whole thing.
And why? Why was she going off separately from the rest of you?
Well, because this lawyer, I guess, had, as I remember it and as I understand it, it seems to me that the lawyer came in her interest, mm-hmm. and so he was her lawyer, mm-hmm. and so he was taking a lot of, making a lot of overtures that nobody was about to make for the rest of us. And that's my recollection of this. So then the day came when they were supposed to make a decision about whether we were going to get out or not on OR and whether everybody else was. That was the big thing. And the judge was very negative. And the following day was to be the final hearing about this, and there was a switch in judges to Judge Peckinpah, who was a whole other thing. By the end of that day, with him on the bench, we got word that evening that we were going to be released, all of us, on OR, with the exception of 2 of the farm workers, and there was valid reasons in terms of their past history. It wasn't just a bias against the farm workers that would be, and that was all the people had been asking, would be that each person would be viewed on their own merits, and these 2, and apparently there was some serious questions about them, but everybody else was allowed to get out, and it was all, you know, it all happened at the last minute, and at 9 o'clock in the evening, they're taking us in a bus, and leaving us all off down at the city hall. And however, the farm workers were pretty sure this was going to happen. We were having a big rally and a big mass down there, so we arrived just on time for the whole thing, and it was quite a big celebration. So that's kind of a...
How many days were you in jail?
2 weeks. Right from just exactly 2 weeks.
Were there farm worker women somewhere near where you were housed?
Oh, they were with us. We were all together. That was another
in
thing.
That great big room.
Yes, and that was another thing that we really tried hard not to all be together and to refuse to be separated from these other women. And so we were all together, and some of them were rather old women, and some of them were quite young, very young, and. One had tiny children at home that they were worried about, and some of them had tiny children at home and their husband was in jail downtown, so or maybe he was in the other barracks. Now, one of the things that happened that was kind of interesting was the sister that I mentioned from our St. Paul province, who was a general counselor, I think she grew up in an army family or something, and so we hadn't been there 24 hours before she sent to the guard and said, we want to know if we're accustomed to going to Mass in the morning, and we want to know what preparations you're making for us to go to Mass. And he said, wait, you're in jail. And she said, I know we're in jail, but this is a matter of religious whatever, and you can't, in a country like this, you can't just deprive us of that. And she said, you've got a whole barracks full of priests over there. And they said, but there's a law that says that men and women inmates can't mix. And however, by the time she got finished, they imported two priests came from Fresno every day in the evening after supper, and they herded all of us, all the farm worker men and women, nuns and everybody, into the gym where we sat on separate sides. And we celebrated the liturgy, and we sang, and it was a wonderful, wonderful celebration. We ended up every evening with De Colores, and then we would go back to our place. And the other thing that I know was extraordinary, or was not according to oil, was we had visiting hours every evening. And we would get back to our barracks, and they'd get us all locked up, and pretty soon people would start calling over about so-and-so. It was kind of like visiting Sunday in the convent or something, you know. They were sending over these lists of all these people that we wanted, and we kept laughing about going to the parlor. And so then they'd have to wait till they had four or five of us together and two guards to walk us across the yard into this gym. And the gym was just packed every night with people. The families of the farm workers and the nuns and came, and because all sorts of nuns converged on Fresno when this thing happened. And they were coming, and our general superior flew out from St. Louis, and everybody was coming. And I really had to put on so much personnel to handle this little thing, and I'm sure they were so glad to see the last of us. And then when we came back, they would have to check to see if we had brought anything back with us, you know. I forget what I brought back with me one night. Some candy, something like that, and they took it away from me. And after they checked it out, they came back into the barracks and gave it back to me. You know, and they did that with everybody. So it almost seemed like we were playing games, you know, that these were not... This was not the way people ordinarily were treated in jail. I felt sorry for the guards, the women guards in particular, because I think the group, as a group, was a real threat to them for a couple of reasons. The farm worker women, the younger ones in particular, were very hard on them. And they were very hard on me in that way, The nuns were very hard on me in another way because we kept asking why we were doing this. And why was this regulation? Or why did they have to do this? And they would say, I don't know, it's just what we're supposed to do. And we'd say, you mean to say you just do that when somebody tells you to? You don't know why. You know, we were pursuing this with them, and the farm worker women were screaming at them, you know, some of the younger ones, not all of them. So I felt, periodically, I felt really sorry for these women. There was one young woman there who was an Oriental, and she was so confused by the whole thing. Catherine Morris, who was with us, started us exercising in the morning, so we had a little exercise period every morning that the farm worker women joined. And then we had prayer groups, and they taught us a little Spanish, and we tried to teach them a little English. So we had a lot of activities going on. Joan Baez came one day and entertained us. What's his name? The man that was so much in the publicity before Watergate, Ellsberg, he came. He and Joan both came. And so they had to, you know, the jail authorities had to provide for Joan to give us a concert for us to all come together to hear this concert. So there were some kind of amusing dimensions to this. But I think the thing that I felt kind of very salutary, you know, was that whole notion of being locked up and subject to what somebody else said you were to do when they said you were to do it. In a certain sense, in the manner in which they said you would do it. And that sense of being controlled, at the same time kind of realizing that people could do all those kinds of things to you, but they couldn't get at the thing that was the most important, you know, in terms of your spirit and heart and thoughts and things. And I often found myself thinking about that part from Bernstein's Mass, that lyric where he talked about, you know, you can lock up people and you can do this and that, but the word of the Lord, you can't touch that in people. And I remember particularly when we first got there, when the whole thing was so kind of appalling to me, thinking about that. And some of the kinds of things that a lot of us found very hard. I'm sure lots of other people did too, but I think the ones found it particularly hard. The common bathroom with no privacy whatsoever. And, you know, so most of us have never had hardly any exposure to a lot, and to have to sort of just say, well, this is the way it is, and try to be comfortable with that was a real challenge. But it was. I didn't realize I was going to read on like this because I haven't talked about this in ages and ages and ages. It, as I said to you on the phone, though, I think it was probably one of the more significant events in my life was this. And
why was that?
Well, I don't exactly know. Well, I think when I sort of reflected about making that decision that evening in the park, afterwards, when I was sitting there in jail thinking about it, I spent a lot of time lying on my bunk. I was on the second level, and that was the way I could sort of get away from the card playing room, and whatever might be going on was to crawl up there and just close my eyes and try to push everything out. When I was thinking about that, it began to occur to me that I had this feeling that I really didn't even make that decision, that somehow or another I just felt it was a gift, a grace, you know, that I hadn't struggled about, well, if I do this, well, this will happen, or maybe I shouldn't do it, or I'm scared to. I don't know, somehow or another, it seemed the most normal thing in the world to do, and I did it. And as I reflected back on it, I had this feeling that I didn't do it at all. It was sort of done for me, you know. And I think that's part of what made it seem significant. And then, personality-wise, I have always... it's always a struggle to be in a position in which I'm not in control. And I definitely experienced the fact that I was not in control. If I didn't eat just so fast, then I had to go without what was left on the plate. And if the guard said I had to be inside, then that's what I had to be. Then I would prefer, but I couldn't do anything I wanted to do unless somebody else said it was okay. That was a very probably good experience for me, because it was something that I had resisted always. And I found myself kind of entering into that and thinking, well, you know, that's good. This is what lots of people have to do all the time. And, so that might have something to do. I just know that when I left, I was so grateful for the whole experience. I think most people have seen me as a little quite stuffy sort of, a little conventional, the last person in the world that they'd expect me. In fact, people told me afterwards that everybody laughed, you know. Somebody said, "Yes, did you hear the latest Rosa say you're in jail?" And well, they just cracked up laughing. They thought it was the funniest thing they'd ever heard of, you know. And I think the fact that everybody thought it was so funny, and so Marilyn Rudy sent me a telegram, which I received in jail, and said, "You've come a long way, baby." And, you know, that was everybody's attitude toward it, which, as I look back on it, made me think, well, that something like that needed to happen to me, if that's how everybody viewed it, you know. So, for just lots of reasons, it was a real thing.
Were you teaching at the time? Were you in a teaching position?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was teaching in the theology department at the college.
Oh, so you didn't have a problem of a threat to your jobs that you were at your own college, community college.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know of any of the women who did have problems with their jobs because of the arrests?
Well, I didn't. No, I didn't hear that. See, all of those women that I knew were all, a lot of them were college teachers at their own colleges, too. And one of them was the provincial of the whole province. She was the head lady. And
which
her problem, that was Sister Mary Mardell, I think. Where is she? Mary Mardell.
Oh, yeah.
Religious of the Sacred Heart. She was, you know, the group that run Lone Mountain in San Francisco. She was their major superior at that time. I think some of these sisters were apprehensive about their community and how their community was going to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And but I don't think anybody in this group was threatened in terms of her job.
I remember interviewing Casey Young not long after the arrest in Fresno at the convention, and she said that she had been really worried that it would be a felony and that she would not be allowed to teach. But since it was a misdemeanor, she was able to continue.
Well, and the thing was, it was dismissed. I forgot that part. That, you know, when we got out on OR, and we were told that a date would be set for the trial. And then I got word of a date. And the date was, I forget what the date was. But within a couple of weeks previous to that date, the charges were dropped. So it wasn't anything. It wasn't a misdemeanor or a felony or anything else. The charges were dropped. People at that point in time said it would have cost Fresno so much money to have carried that through with all of us. couple of lawyers told us that we really could have sued them for having kept us in jail all that time and without any further, any action at all. But no one was particularly interested in
that. What were the charges against you when you were arrested?
I think it was trespassing. Yeah, I'm sure it was. Because, as I said, we weren't out on the public thoroughfare walking up and down. We were on a dirt road between two orchards, so I think we were on private property.
I was surprised when you described that you were arrested at a fruit grove.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept picturing that it was just around vineyards.
Well, no. Mm-mm. I think that surprised me, too. I just have a stereotyped notion that farm workers meant grapes, and of course they weren't necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But this was, as I said, it was either apricot, peach, or nectarine. I can't remember which orchard.
Do you remember of the other people that were arrested during that period and were sent to these Fresno County facilities, was there a group of major superiors that had been also meeting in Fresno? Do you know about that?
At that time, during
the same general period?
Well, there were many major superiors at that symposium.
I see.
San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
And now, depending on how you define a major superior, one of our women who was a regional superior drove to Parliere with me in the same car. And she made it her business the afternoon of the day that we were arrested. I don't know how she ever managed it, but she got herself in to the jail and got permission to see all the women religious who were there. And her purpose in doing that was simply to get from us people that we would like to have a contact with various people's superiors or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the farm worker women were a little upset about that. Some of the sisters were a little upset too about being singled out. But so she was around, and she came to call on us more than once. But I do not recall ever hearing that there was a meeting.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's probably what it was. It's been a source of curiosity to me, because there was a meeting of general superiors of men in San Francisco at about that same time, and I was surprised that, you know, that both those groups might have been meeting at San Francisco at the same time. And so I've been trying to find that out. So this is probably the answer to it, that it was not a meeting of major superiors per se, but was this symposium.
I'd be more inclined, because first of all, I'd be more inclined to think that was it, because they were major superiors. This was a big thing that the Jesuits put on, and I can't recall whether it had to do with some anniversary or not. And they brought in speakers from all over the world, not just from this country, top people from all over. So I'm sure Jesuit provincials from the States, any place in the States, were probably there, lots of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I would expect that if the Jesuits had invited groups of women religious who had some ties with the Jesuits, that the people who more than likely would be the ones that would call,
right,
would be major superiors.
Yeah.
So some of ours were there. I think our provincial was there. And some of those regional superiors who represent another level.
Mm-hmm.
I would expect that that might have been what it was. You know, and maybe it was described as a time in which there was a big meeting of men and women superiors.
Yeah.
But I think it was the same.
I interviewed Jean Boyle a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Father Eugene?
Yes,
Boyle from
uh-huh.
the Bay Area. And he was one of the people at that meeting. And I'm pretty sure Jean is a Jesuit. I have that in my notes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the people who went over and was arrested also.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Was in the men's jail.
Mm-hmm. They said that was really bad.
Yeah.
You know, ours was confinement, but in terms of cleanliness. And they said it was just terrible. Mm-hmm. They could never be outside.
Well, I very much appreciate having this chance to to hear this story. It's very interesting. Is there anything else that occurs to you that you want to have me know about? And something else that I might ask you about is I understand that you had a long-standing involvement in supporting farm workers, particularly though in the summer of 73. What was the role of the threat of violence against the farm workers? What role did that play in your own motivation to be there for them and to be supportive?
Well, I think we were very conscious in our local community, particularly in view of Ann Gabriel, Judy, Mercy, and Judy, about that. I think we were very conscious that it wasn't just a case of negotiations that weren't working well, but it was a case of this violence, and I think a couple of people have been killed in the present. So I don't know that I specifically said it's because of the violence I want to do something. I guess there was something in me that made me want to respond to these people, you know, who were in such dire straits and such need. And I didn't expect that what I did was going to make life too much different for them, but I was kind of, and I know that other people felt this way too, that we were very anxious that they see some church people who cared about what happened to them. Even though our going to jail maybe didn't make what happened to them not happen anymore, but it said something to them about the church supporting them, caring about them. I think that probably would be.